This happened on the night of Easter Sunday. My older brother and I had been roommates for a few years, living in an apartment about a 15-minute walk away from our parents. Every year, we would walk there to have dinner with our parents for Easter. Our apartment and our parents' house were separated by a fairly large park, but a trail went straight through it, which crossed under a bridge at about the halfway mark. It was early in the evening when my brother and I made our way through the park toward our parents. We weren't the only people out there, but it was becoming very empty. By the time we made it to the bridge, we hadn't seen anyone in a few minutes. That's when we started hearing something moving in the bushes. We both stopped and looked all around, trying to see where the rustling was coming from. Sometimes, we would get to see a raccoon or something crawling out of a bush, but we didn't find anything. After a few seconds, we kept walking and passed under the bridge, and when we came out the other side, we heard a whistle. It sounded like it was a person whistling, not a bird or anything. We just ignored it and kept walking, picking up the pace quite a bit to exit the park as soon as possible. We eventually made it to our parents' place a few minutes later, but by then, we were able to joke about how we'd gotten so spooked out by essentially nothing. We soon forgot about it as we had Easter dinner with our family and stayed for a few hours to catch up and hang out with everyone. Once it was starting to get late, people started to head home, so my brother and I followed suit. While saying our goodbyes, I talked with my brother about getting an Uber home and avoiding the walk through the pathway since it was late. He told me I was overreacting and convinced me that nothing would happen, and so we left the house and re-entered the park. As we were walking, it was pitch black. There weren't any streetlights around, so we had to use the flashlights from our phones to guide us home. I never walked through the park this late at night, and had always found it relaxing and peaceful, but without light. The whole place was creepy as hell. I was about to say something to my brother about how we should have gotten a ride, but just at that moment, we heard something nearby. It was the same rustling sounds we heard before, but in the darkness, so it felt twice as loud. A few seconds later, we heard the whistle again too. A chill ran down my spine, and I know my brother felt it too. That's when we both started speed walking down the path. We knew we were almost halfway home when we saw the bridge, but we didn't slow down. We walked into the tunnel and hurried to the other side, making it out in half the time it usually took us. Getting out of there never felt so relieving. That is until we heard the whistle again. This time, it sounded like it was right behind us. We looked over our shoulders at the same time and saw it. There stood a man standing at the other side of the tunnel. He was dressed as the Easter Bunny, but he was holding an axe. Something about the sight of him made us stop dead in our tracks. Frozen with fear, we looked at him, then at each other, then back at him, trying to make sense of it.
What's up with that guy? Maybe he works at the mall?
Sure, because every kid wants a picture with the Easter Bunny about to chop their head off.
Oh, shit.
Yo, let's get out of here. Damn it! My ankle!
Shit! Get up! Get up!
I can't! Shit, he's running towards us!
Stay away! Stay away! Help!
I didn't want to leave my brother behind, but I didn't have a choice. I had to get to safety and call for help. When I made it out of the park, I called the police, and then my parents. Minutes later, the police arrived and escorted me back to where we were attacked. By then, it was a nightmare. There was blood everywhere, and my brother's body had been completely destroyed, hacked to pieces and scattered across the pavement. All that, but no sign of the Bunny Man. There have been no arrests since it happened. It was labeled as an urban legend on the internet. But those people act like my brother wasn't murdered. They act like I don't still hear his screams every night. Like I didn't listen to his voice getting further away as I ran while he was begging for his life. For this Easter, it was only fitting that we revisit the infamous Bunny Man Bridge urban legend. For those of you who haven't heard of the Bunny Man, he was a notorious killer that wore a white rabbit suit, and at the stroke of midnight, Lore has it that if you speak his name 3 times, he'll appear. Bunny Man, Bunny Man, Bunny Man, but don't expect to survive. He'll slash your throat and leave your body dangling from the bridge. Another rendition of the Bunny Man was that he was a spirit of an escaped mental patient who haunts the railroad bridge, living in the woods near the bridge where he ate rabbits, taxidermy, that kind of thing, and wearing their skins like Leatherface, and leaving their remains hanging in the trees. There are plenty of versions of the Bunny Man bridge legend, all equally eerie, making the one-lane tunnel of Colchester Road such a popular spot that police stake it out every year, chasing off trespassers searching for a scare. The Bunny Man bridge was featured in the Fox documentary, Scariest Places on Earth, and has been mentioned countless times across the internet. My wife and I had 3 sons, and they had plenty of cousins, aunts, and uncles to grow up around. Our house was the biggest in the family, so everyone came over whenever we hosted a holiday like Thanksgiving, New Year's, or a birthday party. So when it was Easter Sunday, we invited everyone over for dinner. It was always a good time, but there was one person in the mix that I didn't want to be in the mix. It was my brother. His name was Robert, and he had always been an outcast in the family. He was a weirdo when we were growing up, and it only got worse as the years went by. He dropped out of school and was never capable of being social with people, so he just went from job to job his whole life, never finding his footing in anything. About 5 years ago, his luck finally ran out. He was broken in debt, with no job, no car, and no place to live. Being the caring brother I am, I didn't hesitate to let him stay with us when he asked for help. The only thing Robert seemed to be good at was scaring my kids with his creepy behavior and leeching off me and my wife. For the most part, all he did was sleep in his room all day, watching TV with the door locked and only coming out when he absolutely needed to. I just didn't want my brother to be homeless, but everyone, and I mean everyone, was trying to get me to kick him out. My wife was pissed at both of us. My kids were begging me to get rid of the creepy man sleeping in the room next to them. And even my relatives were baffled by my inaction. The few times that Robert tried to hang out with us, it was unbearably awkward. His interests were all macabre, graphic stuff I didn't want my kids to be exposed to, so I often had to shut down his attempts at conversation. All in all, Robert's life was a shit show. When Easter came around, we were hosting as usual, with me, my wife, our kids, and all the relatives. There were close to 20 people attending the celebration for Easter Sunday. Everything was good for a while. We painted eggs, did the traditional egg hunt, and got everyone to sit in the living room and watch a movie together. For hours, there was no sign of Robert. My wife and her sister started getting dinner ready when they heard a loud thump coming from upstairs. It sounded like Robert had stepped out of his room swinging the door open. That's when he came downstairs and asked for a glass of water. As I began to pour Robert a glass, he leaned down to my son and started talking to him in a low voice. My wife snapped at me to go stop him, so I quickly got between them and sent Robert back upstairs as kindly as I could. The guy then gave me a death stare from hell, and then marched up the stairs like a demented 12-year-old would. Except, he was in his 40s. About 2 hours later, all the food was ready, and we got all the guests to sit at the table. Everyone was talking excitedly about how good the food was.
Guys, I know we all want to eat, so it's time to say grace, okay?
Really? Now?
We can probably just fix him a plate. Hey, buddy, we didn't forget about you. Just thought you wouldn't want to come down. Robert, what are you doing with that? No! No! No!
It was so unreal. I walked among the remains of my family for hours, looking into their paralyzed faces, watching their blood pool together and seep through the floorboards, smelling their final emissions, like the breath of death itself was on my cheek. I knew it was wrong. I knew it was a monstrous thing to do. Yet, some people go their whole lives without accomplishing anything. I knew half the people I took out were just like that, unimportant, unmemorable, doomed to be forgotten by history. I was going to be one of them too, but I changed that. It's not that I enjoyed it. It wasn't like scratching an itch. It was more like flipping that light switch off and on 3 times just so you can stop thinking about it. I only felt hollow relief, but I couldn't go for another second without it. Still, I wasn't going to be a coward and try to avoid the consequences of my actions.
You've reached emergency services. Please.
Listen to me. I am at 635 Minor Avenue. My family was having their Easter dinner, and I did something bad. Something very, very bad.
Sir, what did you do? Sir? Sir? Hello, sir?
I walked outside and waited for the police on the porch. I wanted to get one last breath of free air before they put me away forever. It took the police 10 precious minutes to arrive, and since then, I've never seen the outside world.
This story was inspired by a horrific incident that occurred on Easter Sunday. A 41-year-old man named James Rupert took out 11 members of his own family in his mother's house in Ohio. Rupert was found guilty and received 2 life sentences to be served consecutively. He was moved to Franklin Medical Center in Columbus, Ohio in 2019 because of his declining health. James eventually passed away from natural causes on June 4th of 2022 while incarcerated at the Franklin Medical Center. Rupert was 88 at the time. The night before the murders, James went out as he did nearly every night. At a cocktail lounge, he talked with an employee saying he was frustrated with his mother's demands on him and his impending eviction, and that he quote-unquote needed to solve the problem. According to Bishop, Rupert stated that his mother had complained that if he could afford to buy beer 7 nights a week, he could afford to pay the rent. This happened around Easter, which still traumatizes me till this day. I used to do community work at this old church a few years ago. It was more than just a place of worship. It was my home. I grew up in a very religious family where Sunday Mass was non-negotiable. Holidays were all-day affairs, and praying was an everyday thing. I knew everyone in the church, from the nuns to the choirs, the priest, Father Michael, and a lot of regulars that came to pray. We were basically a tight-knit community, which I would consider my family to some degree. Then, things began to change. One of the nuns, who we'll call Sister Agnes, started to look off, like more gaunt and pale than usual.
Sister Agnes?
Yes.
Is everything okay?
Yes. Everything is just fine. No problems at all. What a lovely day it is, right?
Yeah, it is a lovely day.
The week leading up to Easter was a whirlwind. We were all working overtime, getting the church ready for the big day. I was helping clean the restrooms, and Sister Agnes was looking particularly frail. The priest, Father Michael, was with her, so I didn't worry too much as he was looking after her. That was how it was for the next few days, and before I knew it, it was Easter Sunday. However, it wasn't at all what I expected. What was supposed to be a big celebration became a nightmare. When I made my way to the church for the Mass, I saw nothing but police cars everywhere. The church was cordoned off. No Mass, just the cops and that awful sinking feeling in my stomach. Then, the news broke. Sister Agnes had been taken out. She was allegedly punctured about 30 times with an inverted cross carved into her chest. At first, I couldn't believe it. It was something out of a horror movie. Far from the peaceful church I had always adored, I broke down, sobbing and shaking. How could this happen? Who could do something so evil? The whole neighborhood was in shock. Everyone was whispering about how it could have been a cult or something that did this to her. But over time, there were no leads or suspects. It became a cold case, and everyone just went back to living their normal lives. But I was still terrified. I couldn't even walk past the church without getting nervous. So, I started going to a different church just to feel safe. It took me 3 years before I could even think about going back there. But eventually, I did. But it wasn't the same. Something about the whole situation just didn't sit right with me. During one night after Mass, I stayed to catch up with Father Michael. I waited for him to complete his churchly obligations. And when everyone else had left the church, it was just me and Father Michael.
We started catching up, recalling the good old days, stuff like that. I know that it should have been comforting for me, but for reasons I couldn't explain, something was off. What happened next caught me off guard. One moment, we were sitting down and socializing, and the next, he suddenly lunged at me, bear hugging me like a wild animal, while cackling like a lunatic. I kicked and screamed as hard as I could, hoping someone could hear me and come to my aid. Shut up! Shut up! Shut the hell up or you're gonna end up like her! I couldn't believe what I was hearing or what was happening. All I could do was fight back like a cornered animal. But I couldn't do much as he was much stronger than me. He pinned me to the ground and held me there. All I could do was kick and scream and try to fight the freak off. I was basically in survival mode. After several minutes, I managed to break free, getting away from him. I ran like my life depended on it. He was chasing after me, pleading for me to stop like a lunatic. I felt like a trapped animal waiting to be slaughtered. I ran for the front door of the church, not knowing the caretaker already had it locked. But before Father Michael could catch up to me, I ran to the side hallway and was able to find an exit. I got the hell out of there and ran until I arrived home. I locked all the doors and windows, sobbing and shaking. I called the police, telling them everything that had happened. When they arrived at the church, they immediately arrested him and brought him to jail. And that's when the horrible truth came out. The news reports and police investigations pushed the authorities to reopen the case of Sister Agnes. It was later found out that Father Michael had been hearing voices in his head, and that they were allegedly too impossible for him to ignore, causing him to act in a rage and take her out in a twisted, ritualistic way. He took a knife and did what he did 30 times. When authorities asked him why he pierced an inverted cross on her, he said he did it because he wanted to make it seem as if there was a satanic ritual that took place, so that there was no heat on him. But all along, it was him. He'd been hiding in plain sight. Poor Sister Agnes, she didn't stand a chance. This story was inspired by a horrific Easter incident that happened on Holy Saturday in Ohio, and involved a nun and a priest. In April 1980, Sister Margaret Ann Paul was found in the chapel of Toledo Mercy Hospital. She had been pierced by a sharp object over 30 times, including 9 wounds in the form of an inverted cross, and covered with an altar cloth. The scene was made to look like a satanic ritual that had taken place. It took 2 decades for the slaying to be solved, in which time, the case went cold, and was only reopened after a woman accused a priest of ritual intimate torment. That priest/culprit was Father Gerald Robinson, the same priest who had conducted Margaret's funeral service. He was finally arrested in 2006 and sentenced to life in prison, where he later passed in 2014.